Will you pray with me?
The lone wild bird in lofty flight is still with thee, nor leaves thy sight, and I am thine, I rest in thee. Great Spirit, come and rest in me.
Amen. In the beginning were desire and longing. Desire for ecstasy and connection, longing for the deepest of connections. And desire and longing were with God. And desire and longing were God. Desire and longing were with God in the beginning. It was one of those times in my life when I was pondering and struggling with a lot of things. What should I do? Who was I? What was God calling me to be? Although not necessarily visible on the outside, the questions swirled within me, a constant companion. In the midst of this, I visited my best friend in Colorado, and we drove with her family into the Rockies for a couple of nights of camping. As everyone was sitting around the fire, just as the sun was beginning to set, I decided to go for a short hike by myself. Although my questions were front and center, distracting and diverting my attention, I tried to take in the beauty of the peaks in the distance and the little valley into which I was descending with its babbling brook and pine trees and flowers growing around the stones that were scattered everywhere. As I got to the bottom of the valley, I saw a huge log. It was a tree that had fallen long ago, and it seemed to beckon me to lie down on it, to think and to pray. On my back, with the solid wood underneath me, I looked up and spotted a hawk just gliding above me. For a while, I got lost again in my inner struggle, but soon my attention was brought back as the hawk circled and then tucked its wings and simply dropped out of the air. As I lay there, it got closer and closer to the ground until finally it extended its wings and made a sound, and it buzzed near me and was taken up effortlessly. For the next period of time, I really don't know how long, I lay there witnessing what, to me, in that moment, seemed to be God's direct presence. The cycle of trusting, falling, allowing, being returned to safety. The interplay of letting go and risk-taking. And it was as if God was speaking directly to my heart. You don't need to worry. You don't need to be in control. Trust me, and I will guide and protect you. His heart was breaking in that particular way that happens when you witness contamination and pollution. The water that had flowed so freely, whose movement and smell, whose molecular makeup had nourished thousands of plants and animals and humans for millennia, that water was now dammed by the Fujiwara Dam, and it had become twisted and distorted, toxic instead of nourishing, its very molecules damaged. And so, Reverend Kato Hoki, chief priest of the Juhuin Temple, went to the water in the dam, like he would to a sick member of his community. For an hour, he prayed and sent his intentions for healing. I don't have any idea if Reverend Hoki knew the power of his prayers, or if he simply prayed because he had to. But a scientist studied the effect of Reverend Hoki's prayers. That scientist, Dr. Emoto, reported that Reverend Hoki's claiming his deep relationship with the kindred water literally altered and restored the molecular structure of the water. Reverend Hoki's prayers brought forth a beautifully formed geometric crystals in the water, the kind that are found in clean, healthy water, where before they had been damaged and broken. Dr. Emoto also found that our singing and playing music near water can heal the water too. A few summers ago, Ron Rooney, Fred Smith, Ashley Harness, Kayla Collins, Claire Klein, and myself joined a few hundred colleagues from kindred UCC churches across Minnesota for our annual meeting of the Minnesota Conference. The keynote speaker that year was Reverend Tracy Blackman. Now, if you're a church nerd, you probably know her name. You might also recognize her if you've followed the moral revival that Reverend Dr. William Barber and the Poor People's Campaign has been engaged in. Reverend Blackman is an African-American woman who pastors in the town right next to Ferguson, Missouri. For nearly 25 years, she was a nurse and worked on a variety of public health crises. But in middle age, she went to seminary and became a pastor. When she addressed us at the annual meeting, she told us the reason for her change in careers was that at their heart, all questions and conundrums of justice are first and foremost questions of theology. How we describe the world, what metaphors we use, how we understand God's dream for the world, these can either shape justice or make injustice inevitable. As a pastor and theologian, I very much resonated with her decision to focus her life's work in theology. And particularly today, I find it to be deep wisdom. We are facing a human-created climate crisis. Our glaciers are melting much faster than we thought. The Amazon, known as the planet's lungs, because 20% of our oxygen comes from these sacred trees, is on fire. And just yesterday, I read that the United States and Brazil has signed an agreement to, quote unquote, develop the Amazon. And drill, baby drill, animates large crowds in too many political campaigns. Today, we watch the first parts of Paris to Pittsburgh, a film about the work of climate justice activists. And as Ellie shared, after church, we are all invited to share in a conversation with Julia Nurbin from Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, who will be here to help us become a climate justice congregation. All of this is critically important, and I urge you to find whatever ways speak to you and become involved. One of the most important ways that we, as a Christian community, can become involved is to grapple theologically. We can seek to root ourselves in God's true dreams for us and for our planet. And we can interrupt and deconstruct the bad theology that we've been taught. One of the most painful and destructive theologies we've been taught comes to us from the doctrine of discovery. Our Christian ancestors, popes, kings, and queens, and all of those who did their bidding, including pastors and priests, used Christian theology to say white European Christians were divinely ordained to conquer, rule, and own the land and any peoples who were not white, Christian, and European. When we talk about empire Christianity, that's what we mean, using theology to justify and sanctify a world order that is based on using, extracting, and owning of some by others. And one of its principal organizing theories is that of disconnection. But my friends, this is bad theology. Fracture, disconnection, use, and abuse are not God's dreams for our world. What if God's dream for the world, what if the deepest longing of God, what if the central logic of creation is that of deep, deep connection? What if we are made for communion? What if the hawk's flight and the water's crystals are inextricably bound with each of ours? What if we are all related to each other? What if what happens to the monarch on its long sojourn affects our food source? What if in the beginning were desire and longing? Desire for ecstasy and connection, and longing for the deepest of communions. What if desire and longing were with God, and desire and longing were God, and desire and longing were with God in the beginning? And what if, in fact, they were the animators, the prodders, the relentless whisperers, which propelled the explosion of creativity, stars and planets and the whole company of creation? It matters which word was with God and which word was God. For far too long, we've been taught that domination, disconnection, power over, these were with God and are God. But my friends, this is bad theology. Connection, communion, deep, deep relationship are God's desires for us. These are the words that were with God and that are God, and through which all things have come into being. May we remember this and live as followers of this word become flesh. Amen.